Today we move from creation and cosmos to Genesis' first family. And if you still have your Bible open, there's pew Bibles right in the pew racks in front of you. You'll see that in the Genesis story, there's this TSN turning point right around chapters 11 into 12. And in Genesis, you get this prehistory in Genesis chapters 1 to 11. And then we go from kind of the cosmic, big, out there stories to one person and one family. Chapter 11, verse 31. Now these are the descendants of Terah. Terah was the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran was the father of Lot. Haran died before his father Terah in the land of his birth, in Ur of the Chaldeans. Abram and Nahor took wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah. She was the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and Iscah. Now Sarai was barren. She had no child. Terah took his son Abram and his grandson Lot, son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, his son Abraham's wife, and they went out together from Ur of the Chaldeans to go into the land of Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. The days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Now, chapter 12, the Lord said to Abram, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing." Walter Brueggemann, when he talks about this transition space, says, "The one who calls the world into being now makes a second call." Abram, who, as we work through the story, is later named Abraham, which means father of many. And so Abram gets his marching orders to be a blessing. And in many ways, so do we get our marching orders as well. Now, Abraham picked up his first revelation at 75 years old. And then when we pick up today's story in chapter 15, he's in his late 80s. Any octogenarians in the house today representing? I see you, Roberta. So apparently it's never too late to get swept up into the call of God's drama, to be inconvenienced and interrupted by this God of ours. Abraham's not on the Freedom 55 plan or the Freedom 75 plan or maybe not even the Freedom 85 plan. He's not swinging a golf club, is he, Albert? He's swinging a sword. He's just come back from battle with oppressive enemies trying to fight for justice. He succeeded in this surprise attack on the Elamites, and now he's back in the army barracks, maybe swirling a cognac. No, he probably wasn't doing that. But strategizing how he's going to dismantle this operation and get some rest and healing for his tired, weary bones. It's late night in the commander's tent, and he's rubbing his eyes, probably feeling like a day's work is well enough and done. He stares out the tent door, lost in thought. And in the stillness, a voice. "Abram!" Abram looks out, wondering if it's a family member or servant. "Abram!" Startled and perhaps freaked out, he grabs for a sword, takes his stand. "Abram, do not be afraid." Oh, he's heard this voice before, 12 years ago. And Yahweh is now showing his face round camp again. "Abram, I am your shield. Your reward shall be very great. reward? Abraham thinks to himself, thinks back to that 75th birthday when God called him to leave his homeland. He recalls the promise, I'll make you a great nation. And now, 12 years later, there's not much of a whiff of land. There's not many so-called blessings. And so he doesn't have any sight of children on the way. So perhaps a bit tired, a bit ticked, he says, what will you give me? Lord, God, what will you give me? I continue childless. And you know who's going to be heir of my fortunes? Not my son, but my house servant Eliezer of Damascus. Thanks for that reward, Lord. You've given me no offspring, and so a slave born in my house is to be my heir. But the word of the Lord comes again. Abram, this man shall not be your heir. No one but your very own issue shall be your heir. Huh? Go outside. Look toward heaven. Count the stars if you are able to count them. So shall your descendants be. And Abraham believed the Lord. And Abraham reckoned the Lord as righteous. As we settle back into church life this September, I wonder if you wonder, why do we keep on gathering in this place around these stories? There are probably hundreds of other things we could be doing on a Sunday morning, and yet you found yourself here, in this place, a place of worship, worshiping a God who might feel as close as your breath today, or maybe worshiping a God who maybe you're just hanging on by the skin of your teeth, wondering if this God really does still act and move in the world. And in these first few weeks of walking through the narrative lectionary and hearing chronologically the big stories of our scriptures, you'll hear us talking about what Amanda was talking about, living into these stories, pressing into these stories, finding ourselves, and then living out of the stories, putting ourselves beside these biblical characters, the shrewd, the wise, the scoundrels, and learning the lessons of faith and promise and courage. Again, Walter Brueggemann, who's one of our favorite Old Testament scholars around here for us preachers and teachers and many of you Christians in the pew, when he talks about weekly worship, he says this, and I'm paraphrasing a bit. Weekly worship and being the church is the great rehearsal, the great liturgical re-performance, We gather inward, upward each Sunday, and try to live out this call of being the people of God so that we might be a blessing, so that we might fulfill that call that was given to Abram thousands of years ago. I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. So that's why we gather today. We gather for liturgical re-performance. Isn't that cool? You could tell someone that, no, I don't go to church. I go to liturgical re-performance. Impress your friends and neighbors and tell them to come next Sunday too. But it's a rehearsal. It's this weekly rhythm of gathering us in to hear the stories, to worship, to pray, to share our joys and sorrows alongside these characters of our stories, and then to go out to be a blessing in those places that we're called to go and be day after day. And so I'm going to invite you to look at the back of your bulletin to help us orient ourselves as we get ready for another semester of being the church. This is Barbara Brown Taylor giving her reflection on how we live into these promises that are now and not yet. And so I want us to read this together, and maybe you'll cut this out of your bulletin and maybe put it on your mirror or your fridge or your kitchen window and to remind you of what we're about in these days and weeks that we talk about these stories and the promises. It is a hard thing to believe in a promise with no power to make it come true. She's putting herself alongside Abraham here. Everything will happen by and by, but in the meantime, what is there to live on now? And yet, what better way to live than in the grip of a promise, and a divine one at that, to take nothing for granted or to take everything as granted, though not yet grasped, to handle every moment of one's life as a seed of the promise and to plant it tenderly, never knowing if this moment or the next may be the one that grows. To live like that is to discover that the blessing is not future, but now. The promise may not be fully in hand. It may still be on the way, but to live reverently, deliberately, fully awake, that is what it means to live in the promise, where the wait itself is as rich as its end. All it takes are some regular reminders, because as long as the promise is renewed, the promise is alive, as vivid as a rainbow, as real as the million stars overhead. I got hooked by that phrase, live reverently, deliberately, and fully awake. A few weeks ago, Don preached here and put us alongside some biblical characters and encouraged us to be brave, to live courageously, to bind up the wounds of one another as we walk together. And last week, in the wake of the creation story, Jeremy encouraged us to live as God's creatures, cultivating daring acts of love. And so this week, I think these exhortations build on the previous ones. Live reverently, live deliberately, live fully awake. And so I think that helps us in this answer of why do we come to this liturgical re-performance each week? We go to church, we be the church, because just like stars and rainbows, we too are living reminders for each other, to remind each other that we are not alone on this journey of promise and faith. We do this together. And at First Baptist Church, we will not guarantee that we are perfect, that we've got our act together and we always get it right. But I do think we offer a pretty great example of authentic human beings who are trying to join God in God's making all things new work in the world. In this place of worship from week to week, you'll find us living reverently as we worship. You'll find us living deliberately as we seek the peace and well-being of the city through partnerships and through our own programs. You'll see us and experience us living fully awake to the movement of God in our midst, through the Word, through trying to discern as a community what the Spirit is up to, through revelation from God. We believe in God. We believe in God's outlandish promises of saying, I'll take those dead spaces and turn them into places of life, and I'll even use you along the way. And so we reckon that God is righteous, that God will do this through us, flawed though we are, fledgling, fearful, yet fervent followers. And we're discovering in big and small ways that God is at work. And the blessing's not just this future blessing, but the blessing is here and now. I want you to look to your left and look to your right. These are the fledgling, flawed, fearful people who we get to do life together with. This life of faith, this life of mercy, this life of grace, this life of trying to live into these now and not yet promises. So we are the blessings of God. I do want you to look around again. Like, we are the blessings of God. Isn't that great? We're living the dream. This miracle of a downtown church that's actually still baptizing people and welcoming new members into their fellowship, it is a miracle. And we get to be a part of it. So, we are a blessing. Blessed to be a blessing. We're the twinkle in Grandfather Abraham's eyes. Isn't that good news? And so we do get to shine like stars in the universe, following Jesus, the light of the world. Thanks be to God.